you're ready to for me to turn on the sound.
Hey, this is Meade, Treadwell, and Ketchikan. Can I ask who's on from the pro side, who's on from the con side on the marijuana hearing we're about to hold?
This is Chris Rempert on the pro side.
Chris Rempert on the pro side. Okay. Is Deborah Williams online?
Hi, Lieutenant Governor. I apologize. This is Christina Wolfson. I am online.
Okay, and you plan to present the con side?
I do.
Okay. Good. Nice to talk to you both today. We'll be getting started in just a moment.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Yeah, I left it on yesterday too. So.
What the number was.
Okay. Yeah, I think we're ready to put the sound on. Michaela, are you ready to?
I'm ready.
Okay. Okay. Let me just check before we get started, see if the Okay, thank you. I'm going to call this hearing to order. Actually, I can't do that without Michaela here with a slideshow. Where'd she just... There she is. How are you? Good. My name is Meade Treadwell. I'm Lieutenant Governor of Alaska, and I'm honored to be here in Ketchikan. I want to thank the Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly for offering us the use of their hearing room for this hearing and the other hearings they were holding here this week. What we are about to do is a hearing on Proposition 2, Ballot Measure 2, which will be on the November ballot, an act to tax and regulate the production, sale, and use of marijuana. And I should just say at the outset, our intent is to hold these hearings like a legislative hearing, because you, the citizens, are actually the lawmakers in this case. You will vote in November to accept this law or reject it. But if the law is accepted and becomes the law of the state, some of the comments that are made here may help later on people understand what the intent was. There's issues about the mechanics of how this law will work that we've been trying to put on the record so that people understand how the law would work. You, of course, have your right to make a statement for it or against it as you're convincing others how to vote, and that happens in legislative hearings in Juneau as well. This process of having legislative hearings on initiatives like this began with legislation that was passed in 2010, sponsored in part by former Representative Kyle Johansson of this area. And we have three initiatives on the ballot this year, so we're holding hearings around the state. We're required to hold two hearings on each initiative in each of the state's four judicial districts. So this is one that we're having on marijuana here, and the second that we've had in the panhandle. We had one in Juneau the other day. We have on the line not only a representative of the pro side, the sponsors, Chris Rempert will be speaking, but also Christina Wolston will be speaking on the con side. And for those of you who are listening or watching online, I wanted to direct you to a website which others here in the room may also be interested in finding out. It's the State Online Public Notice System, and that's aws.state.ak.us. And if you go to that, there's a banner at the top that says click here for information on the initiative hearings being held. And on the marijuana hearing, we have copies. We have down profiles and confiles. And I will say that some of the material on the confiles was provided by the state medical officer, and we did not intend to make that be partisan, as it were, for it or against it. I think the arguments in the studies are possibly against the legalization of marijuana, but they will work on that. The fact is that they were studies that were cited in response to questions, and I ask that they be made available for the website. But you will be able to find the slideshow produced by the pro side for the Juneau public hearing, as well as the slideshow produced by the con side for the Juneau public hearing, and audio records of the hearings that we've had in the past. And I suspect the slideshows that you're about to see or that you'll be hearing are very similar to the two slideshows there, but we'll get these shows up on the record of this hearing. So with that, the agenda today is fairly simple. We are going to present a sectional analysis and cost estimate of the bill. Then we're going to ask the pro side to take 10 minutes give their arguments for the bill, the con side to give their arguments in 10 minutes against the bill, and then you as individuals will be invited to speak to the bill, either for it or against it, or to ask questions, not only of the pro and con side, but also of experts that we have online from the state government, including the Department of Public Safety. I know that Major Casanovas is online. People from the Department of Revenue have been available to us, people from the Department of Commerce, because these are the agencies that would be administering this bill if it becomes law and there's mechanical questions that you may have. So let me just go forward and give you a summary of the proposed bill. I'm going to be a little bit repetitive when we move from the summary to the sectional analysis. But this bill, as summarized as follows, would tax and regulate the production, sale, and use of marijuana in Alaska. And it would make the use of marijuana legal for persons 21 or older, allowing them to possess, use, display, purchase, or transport up to 1 ounce of marijuana. It would impose various restrictions on personal cultivation, public use, and operation of marijuana-related facilities. It would allow the legislature to create a marijuana control board in the Department of Commerce and Community and Economic Development, and it imposes an excise tax on the sale or transfer of marijuana, and that provides for the enforcement and administration of that tax. To look at the sectional analysis of the bill, and the copy of the bill, which is a number of pages, is actually on the tables out here. Section 1 of the bill adds a new chapter to Alaska Statute 17.38, Regulation of Marijuana, to the Alaska statutes. And that statute would provide that the production and sale of marijuana should be regulated and taxed such that businesses could sell marijuana, and that such sale should be conducted in a manner that protects consumers and promotes public health and safety. The statute would limit the use, sale, and growth and transport of marijuana to individuals who are 21 years of age or older, and it imposes penalties for public consumption. The statute would allow for creation of a marijuana control board while still allowing for local government to make decisions regarding its use and regulation. Section 2 adds a new chapter, Alaska Statutes 43.61, an excise tax on marijuana to the Alaska statutes. And this statute would impose a $50 per ounce excise tax on the sale or transfer of marijuana from a marijuana cultivation facility, a producer, to a retail marijuana store, distributor, or marijuana product manufacturing facility, and the producer would be responsible for paying the tax. Monthly tax statements would be required by the Department of Revenue from each marijuana cultivation facility, and if these taxes were not paid, the facility would be subject to civil penalties under Alaska Statutes 43.05.220. Now, in the bill, I've given you a sectional analysis. We will go through some of the other items in that, and I've heard the pro and the con side present before, so I think more of what's in the bill you'll learn about in a few minutes. Let me just say that the duration of a citizen initiative, if a majority of votes favor adoption, is as follows. The lieutenant governor shall certify the election returns. An initiated law becomes effective 90 days after certification. So it's likely that after we vote the first week of November, it'll be about 2 weeks or so before we certify the election. And after we certify the election, if this law passes, it will become effective 90 days after that. So if you imagine this law is certified on or about November 15th, on February 15th, this will be the law. This law is not subject to veto like a governor's the governor can veto bills that come out of the legislature, and it may not be repealed by the legislature within 2 years of its effective date. And that's according to the Alaska Constitution, Article 11. And although the legislature may amend an initiative at any time after it's enacted, any amendments made during the first 2 years may not operate to effectively repeal the initiative by amendment or to vitiate the intent. And there's several court cases that have helped give clarity to that point. One of the things that the lieutenant governor does when an initiative is submitted for signatures to go around the state is we work with the governor's Office of Management and Budget to prepare a cost estimate on the bill, and a lengthy document is on the table here, which is an estimate of cost to the state of Alaska for implementation of the initiative, proposing a tax and an act to tax and regulate marijuana. To summarize what the cost estimate said, the Department of Revenue, which would have to levy the new tax, estimates it would need at least three new positions and recurring annual costs of $300,000. They also estimate they would need to spend about $500,000 for a one-time capital expense to configure their tax revenue management systems, and so their estimate was $350,000 to $500,000 there. So for the first year, the Department of Revenue estimated $650,000 to $800,000 in new expenses. The Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development will have some expenses because if the initiative passes, the responsibility for controlling marijuana will lie with the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, or the ABC Board, until or unless a marijuana control board is established by the legislature within DCCED. And as was done with Colorado, the department recommends the creation of a task force to identify legal, policy, and procedural issues that need to be resolved. From creating a database to purchasing vehicles, the estimated cost to create a task force is $1,563,960 for the first year and $1,413,140 for the second year. And so their estimate for the first year is $1,563,960. We also received detailed cost estimates from other departments, including the Department of Health and Social Services, which relates to a number of different issues, and their estimate is $0 to $2.9 million in the first year. The Department of Public Safety, which might have some savings from savings in law enforcement, will actually see an increase in the need for law enforcement to keep marijuana produced in the state from leaving the state. You know, their focus, and you can certainly ask Major Casanovas, who's here, some of the details, but their focus will shift from, you know, a drug control situation to an anti-bootlegging type operation They see an estimate of new costs of $1.4 million. The Department of Environmental Conservation, which regulates food production in the state and is essentially acts as the health department where municipalities do not have their own health department, sees an increase where marijuana is used in foodstuffs, of regulating that, of $136,900. And the University of Alaska, which has to conform with a number of different federal rules related to its funding, related to drug use on campus and so forth, has estimated, has not given us a solid estimate of costs, but indeterminate, but has laid out in the cost estimate a number of things that could raise their costs of compliance. Let me say also for the record that we did not prepare a revenue estimate for the $50 per ounce that would be collected from the sale of marijuana. The pro side has estimated about 100,000 Alaskans use marijuana regularly. We've seen other estimates on numbers, but the question is how many people would be buying, how much is one that we're not in a position to determine without great speculation. And so it's been the tradition in this office, or the precedent in this office over many lieutenant governors, not to publish speculative numbers in the cost estimates for initiatives. So we did not do so, and there was some publicity earlier on that suggested it was a political decision, one way or another, taking side on the issue. We just didn't have enough to speak authoritatively. Other states have found, two other states have legalized the sale of marijuana, and there's still a large black market reported to us in at least one of them. So you can't even assume that all the use in the state is legal use to begin with. It may be all ultimately, you know, we had a situation where liquor was outlawed and then became legal, and there were facilities there. So we'll talk about those kinds of issues in this hearing. With that, what I'd like to do is ask Chris Rempert to introduce himself. Chris, we're going to pull up your slide. So Chris and Christina, who's going to be speaking for the no side on this, I'm going to ask you both as you change slides to say next slide or something so Michaela can move down, and we'll give you each 10 minutes to go forward with your description of the bill and the reasons to vote for it or against it. And Chris, if you could identify yourself and your organization as you start, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Appreciate the introduction. My name is Chris Rempert. I'm the treasurer and political director for the Campaign to Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol. We are advocating for the Yes on Ballot Measure 2 side. Next slide, please. In summary, Ballot Measure 2 hopes to create a more sensible approach to marijuana, and it makes the private use, possession, and home growing of marijuana legal for adults 21 years of age or older. The initiative actively manages the marijuana industry that already exists in Alaska, and it establishes a system where marijuana is regulated and taxed similarly to alcohol. Next slide. Before we get further into the basics of the initiative itself, I just want to take a moment to introduce you to the Campaign to Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol. It's a grassroots organization made up of hundreds of volunteers across the state, who many of whom have been involved with this issue for a number of years. On this slideshow, you'll see a number of different folks. You'll see professors, biologists, lawyers, the current Democratic nominee for Congress, and additionally former deputy director of the Department of Corrections and others. So you can see that the support for this initiative is widespread across the state. Next slide, please. The initiative is on the ballot because over 45,000 Alaskans signed the qualifying petition. We collected signatures over the course of 2013, the second half of 2013, and we had signature gatherers all over the state in both urban and rural Alaska. The response was overwhelmingly positive. Alaskans from Juneau to Nome, Ketchikan, everywhere in between, recognized that marijuana prohibition has failed and that it's time for a new approach. Next slide. So ballot measure two offers, actually, is this slide number five?
Kayla, do you have slide number? Yeah, we have slide number five up.
Okay. Ben, actually, please move to the next slide. Ballot measure two offers Alaskans the opportunity to enact a more sensible approach to marijuana. The measure will allow law enforcement to direct resources away from prohibition and towards violent and otherwise harmful crimes. It will reduce youth access to marijuana and replace the underground market with a system in which marijuana is regulated and taxed similarly to alcohol. It will also bolster the state's economy with significant new tax revenue and job creation, and it will stop the arrest and prosecution of adults who are simply choosing to use a substance that is objectively far less harmful than alcohol, both to the consumer and to the community in general. We know that marijuana is already here. We have the highest rates of use in the country, with over 100,000 Alaskans currently using marijuana. So we're not deciding about whether or not to allow marijuana into Alaska. We know it's here. We're just talking about who should be managing this. Do we want the criminal underground market to continue managing this multi-million dollar industry, or do we want it? Do we want to put it in the hands of responsible tax-paying businesses and into the hands of state regulators? Next slide. Ballot measure two sets up a framework, and after the initiative passes, a 9-month rulemaking period will begin. During that rulemaking period, strict regulations will be enacted, such as strict restrictions on advertising, the banning of so-called child-friendly edibles, and other strict regulations to ensure the sale of marijuana is tightly controlled. Next slide. It's important to note that the initiative actually requires that these steps are taken. It compels the regulatory board to enact these specific regulations as far as advertising and edibles and other things go. So these regulations will be enacted to ensure that marijuana is not sold to minors. And so that means that we can and will ban the so-called child-friendly edibles, such as gummy bears and lollipops and things that you'll hear Christina mention in a moment. Labeling requirements will ensure quality control so consumers know what they're getting. Currently in the underground market, you don't know what you're getting. Like I said, we have over 100,000 Alaskans using marijuana every year. And they have no idea what they're getting. It could be possibly impure, and they don't know what percentage the marijuana is. So it's by putting it behind the counters of licensed regulated businesses that have to test their products, we'll know what we're getting. Additionally, strict restrictions on advertising can and will be put into place. And so anyone else who tells you otherwise has either not read the initiative or is trying to mislead you. Next slide, please. So finally, the initiative provides communities with the greatest level of local control allowed by state law. It would actually be unconstitutional to allow communities to ban the possession of marijuana, but the initiative gives Alaskan communities the opportunity to ban the purchase and sale of marijuana. Those communities who decide to exercise their local option will have a situation that's fundamentally no different than what we already have today. Next slide. Can I just make sure we're on the right slide here? I think our numbers might be off. Is this slide 10, marijuana versus alcohol? Okay. The basis for the no campaign is that marijuana is too harmful to regulate and to allow adults to use. There's no more important discussion to have, and whether that is true. So most Alaskans and most Americans, and presumably even the Big Mistake campaign agree that alcohol should be regulated and legal for adults. And, our goal is to treat marijuana like alcohol. So the relative safety of marijuana compared to alcohol is at the crux of this entire debate. Next slide. The facts are in that marijuana is safer than alcohol, both to the individual and society. This is supported by most objective scientific studies, and it's just common sense. Anyone that has ever been around someone that's drinking and as well as someone that is using marijuana, they'll tell you that the person using marijuana is generally not going to try to commit acts of violence or things like that. It is objectively safer than alcohol, and polls show that nearly 75% of Americans agree with that. So next slide. If we agree that marijuana is far less harmful than alcohol. There's no reason why we cannot or should not regulate in a similar way. Marijuana is less toxic by any measure, as its long-term use is not associated with many serious chronic medical conditions that afflict alcohol users. Next slide. And unlike alcohol, marijuana does not lead to overdose deaths. It does not contribute to violence, sexual assault, and domestic abuse, or fights and injuries, which is a major problem all across Alaska. Next slide. So in considering the benefits of passing ballot measure 2, one of the first and most obvious benefits is that it could actually lead to a decrease in alcohol consumption. Economists have studied this question and found that legalizing marijuana could curb drinking and its associated social costs. Next slide. We know that health costs associated with consuming alcohol are 8 times greater than with marijuana, and we know that the health costs associated with tobacco consumption are 40 times greater than with marijuana. So the extent to which marijuana can serve as a substitute for those substances is actually a huge public health benefit for Alaska. Next slide. One of the most important benefits of taxing and regulating marijuana is that it will actually make it harder for teens to access marijuana. Again, marijuana is already here in Alaska. It's currently easier for teens to obtain it than it is for them to obtain alcohol or tobacco. So by regulating it, we'll require that sales are conducted by responsible businesses who require that customers provide proof of ID, and they have an incentive to make sure they're not selling to minors. Next slide. What we've actually seen out of Colorado, which you know passed a similar measure in 2012, is that teen use has actually decreased. According to the Colorado Department of Public Health, that was information released back in August. Also, there has not been a single case of dispensaries selling to underage customers. The Marijuana Control Board in Colorado did a sting operation earlier this year in which they went around to 20 or 30 Denver retail marijuana stores, and they found that not a single one was willing to sell marijuana to minors. So when you hear the opposition group tell you that teen use will increase after the initiative passed in Alaska, just know that the facts don't back up those claims. Next slide. Along with the reduction in alcohol consumption and teen use, we know that taxing and regulating marijuana will create new revenue for the state. Washington expects to collect hundreds of millions in tax revenue over the next several years. And this money in Alaska is currently benefiting the underground market. It should be spent on important public needs, such as infrastructure, education, and drug prevention and awareness programs. Next slide. Additionally, we know that the state is spending between $8 million and $14 million a year enforcing marijuana possession laws, according to the American Civil Liberties Union. So whatever it costs to implement the law and the regulatory structure, it will certainly more than be covered by the money that we will save no longer having to enforce the failed policies of prohibition. Next slide. And just as importantly, regulating marijuana will create jobs for Alaskans. Colorado's marijuana industry currently supports, the latest number actually says currently supports 13,000 jobs. Those are jobs that we desperately need here in Alaska. Next slide, please. From a public safety perspective, most Alaskans recognize that our law enforcement officials should be focusing on fighting violent crime, not arresting adults for simply using a substance that is safer than alcohol. Yet according to former Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court, Walter Carpinetti, the threat of state prosecution for simple marijuana possession is real and substantial, whereas the threat of federal prosecution for marijuana possession is pretty low and practically non-existent. Next slide, please. The American Civil Liberties Union reports that an Alaskan is arrested for marijuana possession every 4.3 hours in the state. Next slide. All of drug arrests in Alaska, out of all the drug arrests in Alaska, 81% are for marijuana possession. That's actually the highest rate in the entire United States. So what we're doing is criminalizing otherwise law-abiding citizens and wasting law enforcement resources, which could be spent more productively. Next slide. Finally, passing ballot measure 2 will increase access to medical marijuana for patients who really need it, as reported here by KTUU Channel 2. medical marijuana is legal in Alaska, but there's no safe way for patients to access their medicine. So we actually hear stories every day over the course of the campaign from people who have been prescribed marijuana to treat various ailments, but they have to go to the black market to obtain it. And, you know, in closing, I want to issue a word of warning and caution in analyzing the arguments that will be presented by the prohibitionist group today and over the course of the next several weeks. There is an outrageous stigma associated with the use of marijuana. The history of prohibition in this country is that it forces those who support it is that the forces who support it will stop at nothing to maintain the government's policy of arresting and prosecuting adults for simply using a substance which is far safer than alcohol. In 1937, when marijuana was first made illegal, it was done so primarily due to ignorance and racism. Next slide, please. The chief of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics justified marijuana prohibition by saying things like, marijuana leads to pacifism and communist brainwashing. And the primary reason to outlaw marijuana is its effect on the degenerate races. And you smoke a joint and you're likely to kill your brother. These things sound really funny to us now, but, you know, this really is the original reason for the marijuana prohibition laws that we have today. Please advance a couple more slides. I think I didn't mention that. To slide 28.
Yeah, we're approaching 15 minutes, but go ahead, Chris.
Okay, well, I will wrap up here. So our policies should be based on science and fact, not on fear-mongering and misinformation. It's a fact that marijuana is safer than alcohol, and it would be irrational to continue our current policies, which have needlessly criminalized thousands of Alaskans, empowered the underground criminal market, and foregone millions of dollars in tax revenue for good-paying jobs for Alaskans. So I hope that you'll stand with me and thousands of other Alaskans in November by voting yes on ballot measure 2. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your testimony. I'd now like to invite Christina Wolston. Christina, can you give the name of your organization and make your presentation? And welcome back today.
Thank you so much, Lieutenant Governor, and everyone in the room and on the phone. I'm Christina Wolston. I'm the volunteer spokesperson for the Big Marijuana, Big Mistake, Vote No on 2 campaign. If you would go forward to the second slide, which is Others Opposing Ballot Measure 2, I am here representing a grassroots campaign made up entirely of Alaskans. The campaign is funded by Alaskans, and we are organizations and citizens every day from every walk of life and political persuasion down to large industrial organizations like the Alliance and the Alaska Chamber, the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police, and the Alaska Conference of Mayors, to name just a few. If you go to the next slide, cause for concern, it's all about the fine print. At the crux of our concern, we realize marijuana is in Alaska, and it's not about prohibition. It's really, is this the right measure for Alaska? What does this do to our state? And what does it actually mean? And so when you look at the fine print of this ballot measure, you know, I appreciate Chris's optimism, but this ballot measure was written after, modeled after Colorado's ballot measure, and they have not been able to restrict edibles or candies or cookies in their state. They have not been able to restrict advertising and marketing and, you know, full-page ads in the Denver Post. And so when you look at marijuana, it also protects every compound, manufacturer, salt derivative, including marijuana concentrates. It also protects any concentrated marijuana product and marijuana that's comprised of marijuana and other ingredients, including edible products. And so I'll show you a couple of images if you go to the next slide, but it's just a plant. This is an example of the concentrates. They're almost 80 to 90% THC, and these would be legal in Alaska, and you could make those in your home in any village in Alaska. So that is part of the concern. You know, Chris mentioned legislation that was 80 years old. You know, what we're dealing with right now are really it's a modern industry, and it's a big industry, and this is what is looking to come to Alaska. So I think we need to be realistic about what is in present-day big marijuana's toolkit and what they look to bring to Alaska. If you would skip the slide that is making butane hash oil and go straight to the next slide, smoking concentrate vape pen. The fact is that the study that Chris mentioned in Colorado about teen use, that they left out the largest two largest school districts in Colorado, and it's actually a terrible representation of what's going on in Colorado. The White House initiated a drug study based upon the medical marijuana industry in Colorado, and they saw that there was a 25% increase in teen marijuana usage, and that follows the trends of any state that legalizes. And we have a history of legalizing and then reversing those decisions because of the impact to our society, particularly on our youth. This is an example of a vape pen, and they now have highlighters, and they have, like iPhone devices that are hiding the fact that many of these students are using these in schools. The amount has doubled in just a year to nearly 2 million high school students in 2012 that have tried these. These are kids that have never actually smoked an actual cigarette, but they're experimenting with vaporizers. If you go to the next slide, these are the examples of the edibles in the pretty packaging. You know, when my son said, well, Mom, they don't look like a drug to me. They look like a treat. I mean, that is concerning as a parent. I think as anybody in our community, it's impossible for a child to tell that this is intended to be a drug and they shouldn't consume it. And this is the exact page out of Big Tobacco that we saw with their pretty packaging and cartoon characters. And at the end of the day, this is a for-profit industry, and a for-profit industry makes money by getting new users to use and by getting current users to use more. The next slide.
Christina, can I interrupt for just a second? If
sure.
Someone else online is not muted your phone and it sounds like there's a lot of sawing going on or something in the background. Okay, we're better off now. Thanks. Go ahead, Christina.
Sure. So under marijuana edible displays, this is an example of a pot shop in Colorado. If you can see the packaging, they're see-through. They're easily accessible by kids. And again, I think it is wishful thinking for anybody to say that the packaging, the advertising will be any better than it is in Colorado, because this is what they have. And our ballot measure is actually more protective of the marijuana industry and producers and advertising than it is in Colorado. Next slide, the top right-hand corner, marijuana advertising, that's a full-page ad in the Denver Post. We've already seen bus signs in downtown Anchorage saying that marijuana is the safe option for our kids. The next slide, advertising and commercialization. If you look at the bottom left-hand image on the screen, that's the Google Maps search of Denver pot stores in Colorado, Denver pot stores. There are actually more pot shops than there are pharmacies and liquor stores in Colorado. The next slide is children exposed to pro-marijuana ad at the Alaska State Fair. This was, you know, seen by thousands of children at the Alaska State Fair this summer, and I think that we can all agree that this is not a responsible message to send to our kids or anybody, really. The next slide, marijuana is not harmless. I think there's a general scoffing or just maybe a blatant misrepresentation of the harm and danger that marijuana does bring to the brain. And there are respected and long-term studies with thousands of candidates that have studied this over time. Marijuana users have abnormal brain structure and poor memory. It's linked to brain abnormalities in students. It can lead up to an 8-point drop in IQ. I think that anything that is intended to be mind-altering, which is THC, I think it is disingenuous and dishonest to say that it doesn't somehow affect us. One of the challenges in Alaska is workplace productivity. Unlike alcohol, there are no appropriate standards for available for testing marijuana, so we can't ensure our workforce safety, readiness, or productivity. And our workers' compensation costs are already the highest in the nation. There's a couple of stats there. Workers who test positive for marijuana have 55% more industrial accidents, 85% more injuries, and a 75% increase in absenteeism. And that's by the Journal of the American Medical Association. Again, going back to usage, particularly in our youth, Alaska does have a challenge with substance abuse, and this would not take away anything that we see in Alaska as a challenge or the harm to our communities. This would only add and compound to what we see. I'm from a rural village in southwest Alaska. I'm Alaska Native. It is near and dear to me to try to find healthy and productive things for our communities, for our youth, for our Alaska Natives, and certainly this does not fall in line with that. When you look at a study done by the University of Michigan, they looked at and there was a long-term study that was done by the New England Journal of Medicine about perceived risk and usage. And when you legalize a substance, effectively society equates it with safe. So when a teen hears the word that marijuana is safe, they equate it with legal, then they equate it with safe. And their perception of risk goes down and their use goes up. It is just one of the many studies that has been conducted. If you look at the slide, advance a few to why Alaska, why now? Chris is in Alaska on behalf of the Marijuana Policy Project, who is essentially funding nearly 100% of the campaign in Alaska. You know, the signature gatherers were typically paid per signature, were sent around Alaska, but the folks that we've talked to did not understand what was actually in the ballot measure, and so they are concerned and perhaps feel misled that this does include the edibles and the concentrates, and it's a big industry. It's not just about decriminalization or medical marijuana. The next slide is a quote from Rob Campia, who is the executive director of the Marijuana Policy Project out of Washington, D.C., again, who is funding this ballot measure in Alaska. And he said in August, while most people don't care about Alaska, everyone
Christine, can you clarify which slide you're speaking from?
I am so sorry. Go to the slide that says not just any nonprofit.
Thank you.
Sorry. While most people don't care about Alaska, everyone seems to agree that we cannot afford to lose a statewide legalization effort just 2 years after the twin victories in Colorado and Washington. We absolutely must win in Alaska, lest reporters declare the legalization movement to be backsliding. And it is backsliding. If you go to the next slide, we've seen an 18-point shift in the polls, and more Alaskans would vote no than yes on ballot measure two if it were held today. A couple of myths. Myth number one, if you go a couple slides forward, it'll bring in huge tax revenue. While the yes side is now unwilling to tout any sort of revenue claims, they've said some pretty big numbers in the past, but what we see in Colorado is they've actually only seen about $12 million come in revenue in the first 7 months. And they're seven times larger in population than Alaska, and a vast percentage of their revenue is from tourists who drive to Colorado to purchase marijuana. So we think, you know, we've mapped out a very reasonable calculus calculation, and it's roughly $5.1 million. If you would advance to the slide, myth two, eliminates the black market. The black market is still thriving in Colorado, and Lieutenant Mark Compte of the Colorado Springs Vice and Narcotics Unit said it has done nothing more than enhance the opportunity for the black market. If you can get it tax-free on the corner, you're going to get it tax-free on the corner. If you advance a couple more slides to myth number four, I don't know where Chris is getting his statistics, but the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police have said that the Department of Corrections, as of June 2014, prison census data, there were just four inmates in the Alaska correction system who were in prison for misconduct involving controlled substances in the sixth degree. They were told each of these are known to be marijuana-related convictions, but each of these prisoners also had other convictions, sometimes multiple convictions, that would otherwise keep them in prison even if their marijuana conviction did not exist. So we need to look at the reality of incarceration in Alaska. And the last slide, Colorado is having serious issues. There are many unintended consequences. They haven't been able to ban edibles. They've seen a 25% increase in homelessness. So, yes, there would be jobs created, but like Colorado, I think the cost is just too great to Alaska, and we have good reason for a lot of concern because of what we've seen come out of Colorado with youth increase. Crime is up in Denver, 6.7%, and the other costs that are associated with this. So I thank you for your time.
Christina, thank you very much. We have a couple of dozen people here, and I want to open it up to testimony and questions from individuals in the room, but let me just ask a couple of fast questions. First off, which state agency personnel are online today?
Hi, Lieutenant Governor. This is Matt Fonder with the Department of Revenue.
Thank you, Matt.
Hello, Lieutenant Governor. This is Bob Beasley from the ABC Board.
Thank you, Bob.
Lieutenant Governor, this is Dr. Ward Hurlbert, Chief Medical Officer of the Department of Health and Social Services.
Thank you, Dr. Hurlbert.
Lieutenant Governor, this is Diane Castro with Health and Social Services as well.
Lieutenant Governor, this is Kim Stryker with the Food Safety and Sanitation Program at DEC.
Kim, thank you.
Lieutenant Governor, this is April Wilkerson with the Department of Corrections.
Thank you.
Hi, Lieutenant Governor. This is Michaela Fowler with the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development.
Thank you.
Lieutenant Governor, this is Major Dennis Casanovas with the Alaska State Troopers.
Thank you. How's the weather in Talkeetna today?
Fairbanks today, and it's beautiful.
Oh, Fairbanks today. Thank you. Thank you for being being online. A couple of mechanical questions. Chris, one for you. Just reading the plain language of the bill, you set the rate of tax in the second in the section two, and you set the tax at a rate of $50 per ounce, and then you leave it up to the department to lower rate on other parts, certain parts of the marijuana plant, if they wanted to say, you know, support a. What is your intent there? I'm not gonna attribute intent to you. Could you tell us what is your intent there?
Did you say you're not gonna attribute intent to me?
Well, I could guess why you're doing it, but I'd like to hear you say why you're doing it.
Okay. So yeah, the reason behind the tax structure there was to allow for the legislature to create a different tax, either lower or whatever they'd feel like for other parts of the marijuana plant, such as the fibers, for hemp and things like that. So industrial hemp would be allowed under this measure.
Okay, and you say the legislature, the plain reading of the bill says the department. So that's actually an executive branch decision, or would you also expect the legislature to do that?
I guess it does say the department. I assume it would be the board then, the regulatory board.
Okay.
Sorry, I misunderstood what you were asking there. Yeah.
Sure. Now, is it possible for a community to put on a sales tax or an excise tax on marijuana in the community?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Yeah. Both the sales tax and an excise tax.
Yes.
Okay. And section three of the bill says the provisions of this act are independent and severable and shall supersede conflicting statutes, including local charter, ordinance, or resolution. So if a community today has outlawed drug paraphernalia, does this initiative essentially repeal those drug paraphernalia laws?
Can you repeat that question?
Sure. Just again, this is a mechanical question. It's not meant to be for or against, but
I understand.
Look, in Section 3, you say the provisions of the Act are independent and severable, and just going on, shall supersede conflicting statutes, local charter, ordinance, or resolution. And there is a section in the bill related to marijuana accessories, section 17.380.60, that says it's lawful and shall not be an offense under Alaska law or the law of any political subdivision for persons to manufacture, possess, or purchase marijuana accessories or to distribute or sell marijuana accessories to a person who's 21 years of age or older. So just under the local control issues, while you have other local control provisions, in essence, you would be overruling local ordinances. I believe there's one here in Ketchikan, or at least I was told by a shop owner here yesterday who asked me about this, that it would change the laws of the local districts. Is that correct?
So as far as marijuana paraphernalia,
right.
Marijuana accessories, correct. Yeah, so marijuana accessories under this law would be legal statewide, and it would supersede local charter or statutes. What the local option allows for any community, borough, municipality, what have you, to do is to completely prohibit the sale and production of and purchase of marijuana products. So,
right.
So marijuana accessories would be legal in the state of Alaska.
Okay. So, do you know how many communities have outlawed paraphernalia,
I,
kind of head shops and paraphernalia now in the state?
Not the top of my head, no. I don't know that number.
Okay. Okay. It was testified the other day that the bill would become effective February 15th, but there's 9 months required, or up to 9 months required, of the ABC board to issue the regulations in Section 17.38. How do you see things working between the time that marijuana possession is legal and sale is legal, but there's no regulation? How do you see that happening? Would it be legal to sell it after, say, February 15th, even if regs were not in place?
No, it wouldn't be legal to sell it because there would be no licensing or regulatory structure set up yet. It would be legal to grow it in your own home and to possess it outside of on your person up to an ounce, and it would be legal to transfer gift, essentially to gift up to an ounce of marijuana to anyone over the age of 21, so without remuneration. So if I were to grow in my own home, I would be able to gift, you know, a little small amount to a friend, just as if, you know, I had was home brewing beer and I decided to give some of that to my friend. I wouldn't be able to charge for it, but I would be able to just, you know, give it to my, yeah, exactly.
So you'd have a situation for a period of months where the 100,000 users that you mentioned would be able to possess it outside their home but not be allowed to purchase it or sell it.
Correct.
Okay. And then finally, do you have any comment? This came up in a bit of a discussion at the last hearing on people who would be allowed to get licenses, and we have the ABC board on today too. People who've been involved in the illegal sale of marijuana today, would they be eligible to kind of go legit, as it were, and start marijuana shops or not? In your view of the intent of the law?
In my view, they would be allowed if the regulatory agencies don't decide to pass any regulations that prohibit people with prior marijuana offenses on their record to get a business license. So that's just dependent on the regulations. So Section 17.38.090, number 3, says qualifications for registration that are directly and demonstrably related to the operation of a marijuana establishment. So if the regulatory board decided that, you know, it was reasonable to prohibit someone with prior marijuana offenses or felony or what have you, then they would be able to decide that.
Could you also read Section 3 as saying that prior experience with marijuana is a helpful qualification?
Sure.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I mean, I guess there really wouldn't be a way to if someone hadn't been arrested for it, there really would be no way to know that they had been involved in the industry beforehand.
Okay. And then the last question I have, occasioned by the testimony that Christina gave, is, Christina, you mentioned, do you believe there's been an increase in teen marijuana use in Colorado? And Chris Rampert, you said there isn't. Have you guys compared notes there on this, or are we at odds on the facts on that issue?
I think we're at odds. I think the problem right now, and I'll just kind of leave this out there, but the problem is, you know, we have 7 months, 8 months of statistics here. And so it's really hard to tell, you know, what these are, if it's a causation or a correlation type issue. I think I would take objection to Christina's statement that there has been a 25% increase of teen marijuana use in Colorado since legalizing. That's a pretty absurd statement, I think, because that would mean a quarter of teens, an extra quarter of teens in Colorado have now decided to use marijuana because it's legal for adults 21 years of age or older. That simply just doesn't make sense.
Christina, would you like to comment on that?
Thank you. I would. I submitted for the record recently, I sent it to Cameron, a study that was initiated by the White House and what it looked at. And so we do have Colorado as a comparison for more of a long-term look at the trends and the facts. And in Colorado started, you know, its experiment with marijuana in 2006 when it decriminalized and it legalized decriminalized marijuana and allowed for medical marijuana. And then they created their dispensaries in 2009. And so what the high impact drug trafficking assessment, I apologize, I don't have it right in front of me, said was, and they tracked it over the course of legalization. And what they saw was a 25% increase, and I included this slide in the version that is a PDF on the website, and I'm trying to find it on my my laptop right now to quote the percentage. But it was indeed a 25%, and it did include all of the school districts. And I guess that's part of the qualifying statement that we make, is it left the indicator, the study that, or the data that Chris is quoting, doesn't include the two largest school districts in Colorado. And I think it's important to include, you know, a full scope of what's going on there to get a good sense of it. And this, the study initiated by the White House does have some outstanding data trends.
Okay. And is that the study that is now on our website that's the listed as the legalization of marijuana in Colorado, the impact by the
yes.
HIDTA. Okay.
That is correct.
So Chris, just the 25% increase that I think is referred to in that federal document is in 2011. What they say is in 2011, the national average for youth 12 to 17 years old considered current marijuana users was 7.64%, the highest average since 81, and the Colorado average percent was 10.72, so that's in essence 25% greater. So
that's not a 25% increase in Colorado. I think that's what she said originally in her presentation.
Okay. Yeah, I would say. Now we know the source, and you can go back and look at the source and make your own judgment in each case. Okay.
All right. I apologize, Lieutenant Governor, I've pulled up the slide right now, and it says average past month use of marijuana ages 12 to 17 years, pre and post medical marijuana commercialization. And so they compared, when dispensaries went active in Colorado. So it was a 25% increase from 8.29% to 10.37%. So a 25% increase in the total users of use.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, both of you. And the purpose here was, one, to clarify something where I'd seen at least a divergence in discussion. And two, Chris, thank you for giving us some of these intense statements on the questions provided by the mechanics of the bill. Now I'm going to open up the floor for testimony. And is there anyone here who would like to testify on this bill, pro or con? And we have a sign-in list, but I'll take people who raise your hand. Sir, come forward.
Lieutenant Governor, my name's Dave Rayner. I'm a cancer patient, and I'd like to be a survivor today.
Congratulations.
I was advised last year, surreptitiously and quietly by a professional MD that was an employee of the University of Washington, I won't mention them, to safeguard this stock. He said, in order for me to endure my chemotherapy, I may wish to look into utilizing the medical marijuana. I jumped through all the legal hoops, got the documentation in order, and as my hair was run away and I was staying at the South Cancer Care Alliance, feeling quite ill a good bit, but I found that the one aspect the medical marijuana was enabled me to sleep. For some reason, I did not get terribly nauseous. I just felt bone and muscle. But I didn't lose all my hair. And the medical marijuana was content. And of course, the medical marijuana has been legal in Washington State for quite some time, and it still is illegal to smoke in public. But this purpose-built facility, the Seattle Cancer Care Alliance, they didn't have any regulations or special area in private to smoke. So if you wish to smoke or imbibe the marijuana-infused products, you had to do so either in your room or in public. And, of course, I couldn't smoke within the building. But I'd sit outside, and the police would cruise by, and they'd see my bald head. They'd see that I'm sitting there. They knew that I was a cancer patient, and then they just left me alone. I think it is immoral in this country and unethical for a cancer patient or any citizen to be put in jail for the usage of smoking a flower. Too many areas from government has delegated authority of correctional centers across the nation to private corporations. And you are, when you do this, you're inciting a terrible precedent. This country is going down the tubes fast. A large part of it is because of laws passed like this. There was a slide up earlier presenting the figure of a former director of the forerunner of the DEA, Harry Anslinger. Before he died, and this can be researched, I think it was in Rolling Stone years ago, he admitted that he thought that the illegality of marijuana was wrong, drastically wrong. And if you study the history of it all, you'll find that marijuana was made illegal on the close of alcohol prohibition, and law enforcement agencies throughout the country did not want to see their appropriations drop, and they sought a reason to keep their appropriations high. And they found marijuana. At the time, mainly Mexicans, blacks, and Chinese were the users. They thought, well, here's a way we can raise money. And I think it's contemptible and miserable that this has gone on for far, far too long.
Thank you.
We need to see an end to this prohibition of marijuana, and it should be available to anybody. I'm a believer in the philosophy of Thomas Paine, that less government is more better. That's the paraphrase him. I don't know the exact book.
Sure.
But I do know this book. George Washington said, government is like a tool. It can be a useful tool or a fearsome, and he says it's like fire. He says, government is like fire. It can be a useful tool or a fearsome enemy. And what we have across the board in America is a fearsome enemy stuffed with too many lawyers and just contemptibly criminal greed heads. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. If you have any questions for the experts online, you're welcome to ask them, and I just wanted to let you know.
I have no questions whatsoever.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And
read the first page of the Bible. Study it carefully to find an answer.
Thank you. Let me just say that we had a sign-in sheet, and Linda was signed up first. Linda, would you like to speak on this issue? I'm going to go on the sign-up sheet in the order. I've just got a couple there, and then we'll go to the audience. We'll give you 3 minutes, and then anything you want to phrase in the form of questions to the experts, but go right ahead.
Okay. I've been a volunteer in Alaska since 1982 on a local level, the state level, and I was appointed to the Alcohol and Drug Board under Governor Hinkle. I then was elected to serve on a national board of the National Family Partnership, where I was privileged to serve with many well-living, dedicated parents. Because I care so much about the health of Alaskans and Alaskan families, I've been active on all the marijuana initiatives and and have written some of them, and that have been imposed on us by large outside organizations like the Marijuana Policy Project. I strongly oppose the extreme outside-funded ballot measure 2, which is on the November ballot. Marijuana has changed a lot over the years. In the mid-70s, the average potency was 0.96% THC. And in the mid-90s, it was less than 4% THC level. Several years ago, we asked the state troopers to determine the potency of the Mississippi lab for testing of the potency, which came back 29.86%. And now the potency of some strains of marijuana sold in Colorado are over 37% potency. The state does not want marijuana to be legal and commercialized in our communities and our backyards. It is clear to me that we want the job, a growing economy, good schools, and great and productive kids. Our younger kids will be negatively affected by this initiative. Those unhealthy trends do not stop at the fence between a 25-year-old and a 21-year-old. The initiative could also result in attracting a different kind of tourist. I'm concerned that communities and villages cannot restrict people from bringing in high-potency marijuana products such as 80 to 90% THC levels, such as shatter or marijuana under other terms in this initiative. This takes away communities' rights. I strongly encourage you to Google this, marijuana wax and shatter. Smoking some concentrates is called dabbing. Smokers often use a blowtorch to consume the marijuana concentrate. There have been many fires from buildings and garages burned from the production of butane hash oil. Many people have to be transported to the hospital. This is not a healthy lifestyle we want in Alaska. I'm now working with a large dedicated group throughout Alaska who have developed a professional PowerPoint. In Ketchikan, we will be showing the PowerPoint, and I highly encourage everyone to come and see it when we advertise. Colorado and Washington State are the two states that have legalized and commercialized marijuana and are having a very difficult time. When I was watching the legislative hearing in Juneau earlier this year, when the many department heads were testifying, there was also a gentleman on the line from Colorado that told that Alaska department heads to just wait because Colorado is still trying to figure out how to deal with their initiative. We should wait to see how Colorado handles all the problems and association with their initiative. Colorado is having a tough time with people driving under the influence with no clear indicator to determine impairment. Edibles and consumables are also a problem. Children are eating marijuana-laced gummy bears, chocolate bars, lollipops, ice cream bars, and getting ill and going to the emergency room. There are many products that have distorted names, such as Klondike Bar, as an example. In Colorado, they have had adult deaths and an increase in homelessness and crime. In the past, I never had to decipher what the intent of an initiative was. I think the initiative language on ballot 2 is confusing, and there is a lot of misinterpretation by opponents of this initiative that did not have all of the clarification points before the vote was taken. We don't even have enough money to take care of the Ebola, Rob Campia of the Marijuana Policy Project, which is located in Washington, D.C., and supplying virtually all the money for the initiative and the money to pay for the signature gatherers, made it very clear that Alaska is just a pawn in their game. Bob Campia, the Marijuana Policy Project, which is involved heavily in this legalization campaign, he said this: "While most people don't care about Alaska, everyone seems to agree that we cannot afford to lose the statewide legalization vote just 2 years after the twin victories in Colorado and Washington. We absolutely must win in Alaska, lest reporters declare the legalization movement to be backsliding. Well, we do care about Alaska. We're not a pawn that can be bought off with hundreds of thousands of dollars from outside advertising. Vote no on two. We don't want to have our initiative harm our state and families. The stakes are now higher than ever before.
Thank you very much. Ms. Adams, the first thing I'd say is that if you're interested in posting your PowerPoint as part of contributed testimony or your written testimony, you can provide it to us and we'll put it on the website. The second thing I'd just say, if you had any questions for the state agency experts there, we're happy to put those questions out on the line now. Is David Ray still here? That was David, I think, who was Taylor. I'm sorry, no, Matt, no. Lorch Stanton. Welcome.
Thank you. It's close. So my name has been pronounced that way before, but it's been mispronounced many other ways. It's Lauren Stanton.
Oh, I'm sorry. The N looked like an H.
My handwriting is at fault. So I'd like to say at first blush, we can always talk about outsiders in Alaska, and we like to do that, but that doesn't go to the crux of the matter here. We can talk about history and prohibition and the history of the prohibition of marijuana, and those are kind of important here. But I think what we've seen over the history of our country is that regulation is going to work better than prohibition. I think that's pretty much clear. So the historical background gives a real good education as to why we're at the place we're at and why we need to move forward. I'm a progressive person. I like to think that society is progressing, that we're not going backwards, as one gentleman spoke of earlier, and blaming it on all the lawyers. But I think that he'd find that some of the lawyers are in the same position he is. I'm an attorney. I'm a sole practitioner here in Ketchikan, have been for 20 years. My brother-in-law, who recently passed on August the 2nd, is also an attorney here in Ketchikan, Alaska, for over 30 years. And I think that he would smile down at me today if I was standing here, and I am, and say this is a good thing. This kind of legalization, shall we say, making it legal to smoke marijuana is the kind of progress that our society needs. We need to regulate these aspects of our society. For 20 years, I've been where the rubber meets the road in terms of the laws and putting people in jail for marijuana and the involvement in marijuana and other drugs and all of these sorts of situations. But I still come to the same conclusion after 20 years of experience here in Alaska, and that is that legalization, regulation, is the best way to go. It's not really about the money, but that would be a very attractive argument in Ketchikan, because Ketchikan is a merchant-based town. Ketchikan believes in capitalism. This capitalism won. We won the Cold War. Capitalism won everything. We won the world. We're even winning in China. So capitalism's taking over the world, and this town is all about capitalism. But it's not really about the money either. It really can be about the health of our children and the health of our community. And if we want to start talking about the health of our children, the health of our community, and the advertising campaigns, all that sort of thing can be regulated. One of the biggest killers that our country has right now has really been, it's taken off since 1970s. They've increased the potency. They've increased the amount of this killer in our food. And it's on the front page of the paper every day. Today's paper talks about obesity. Obesity is directly related to the amount of sugar and corn syrup in our food. We have aisles and aisles at the grocery store of regulated things where we're not regulating for the health of our children. Childhood obesity is way up. Adult obesity is way up. And we're killing ourselves with sugar. Now, have we done anything about it as a society? Not much. Because since the 70s and the removal of fat from our food and the replacement with corn syrup and sugar, we have basically said to our children and to our fellow adults that obesity is going to be okay and that diabetes and other diseases that come from it are okay, much like we've okayed alcohol. So we've, as a society, decided alcohol is okay. We've decided that sugar is okay, and that's the way we're going to kill ourselves. But if we want to do something right to try to equalize things, we would allow marijuana to enter the marketplace and compete with sugar and alcohol. And we would see if our death rates go down. Maybe we need to regulate sugar more and make sure that sugar doesn't get to our children. And we need to regulate marijuana as well as we can. I wish to point out that fireworks are another area that are regulated and we have local control. And this particular borough doesn't allow fireworks to be sold or used within this borough. That's local control. This bill allows for local control. If Ketchikan doesn't like to have marijuana produced, manufactured, or sold within this borough, we can vote it down. Local control, every village, every town, every borough, every local government organization can go forward with their own regulation and or banning of marijuana under this bill. So I think it's appropriate to vote yes and to have that kind of regulation in place and allow another product to enter the marketplace to compete with alcohol and sugar. I really think that we should move forward, you as a government official should move forward immediately to begin to regulate sugar in our community and our schools. And I think that is very important because we're killing hundreds of thousands of our own citizens in the United States of America every year just by our use of sugar. So I think we need to really look at what's killing us and look at the statistics before we go banning things. Final note, I believe also, if you do the research, you will find out that fireworks are also killing more people in this country than marijuana. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have any questions for the experts online?
Thank you very much for that.
Okay, thank you very much, Lauren. Amelia McAlpine, do you wish to testify?
Sure.
You're welcome to. We'll give you 3 minutes.
My name is Amelia McAlpin, and I'm a retired licensed practical nurse. I used to belong to Families in Action in 81. They had a drug paraphernalia town, and we closed that down because we cared about our children. And I myself got 500 signatures myself. And I was cussed out and everything at certain houses, you know, who smokes pot. And I've seen it tear apart families, mine included. And I don't want to see marijuana. I don't. And the man who talked first about having cancer, and I'm glad that it helped him, and he was going bald. I don't have cancer, but I'm going bald myself, and that's not what I'm here for. I just, you know, in 82, I think it was when they had the investor burning on Prince of Wales, and 8 people were killed. I sat through both of those trials here in Ketchikan and in Juneau, and they never, ever got somebody. They could not bring up drugs during both trials, but there were people who were smoking pot. I don't think that pot is an innocent drug, like they say, or whatever. People don't just stop at pot. They go on to more awful things. And I just want to just say, I don't want it to pass. Thank you.
Thank
and
you.
I don't have any questions.
Okay, thanks, Sue. I on the question of paraphernalia, I asked that question before, and we got the understanding that that you have a paraphernalia law here in Ketchikan. Is that correct? Still? Yeah, okay, and that we understand would be overruled by this initiative. That had not come up in the hearings before. But anyway,
and I'd like, for the record, I'm one of the obese people. And I've never bothered anybody, you know.
Thank you very much. Amanda Mitchell, would you be interested in testifying? Amanda, please come forward.
Thanks for
being here.
You know, it's been kind of an interesting discussion. One of my biggest things is I think it's more about self-medication and poor decision-making. And you see it in schools. We've heard about assault. We've heard about alcohol, prescription drugs selling in schools. We heard a little bit about the vape pen and the highlighters that they use in there. But I know even when I was in school, kids use pop cans as pipes. And they're very creative and very resourceful. I think teens and adults, if they're looking to get high, they're going to find a way. And I know that I actually knew somebody that died from huffing from an aerosol can. And we're talking pain centers. There's a lot of things that they can use to get high and escape from reality. And I think that's really what it comes down to. You have some people that use marijuana for medical reasons, and you have the other side. And I'm sure there's other – it comes down to a personal choice on why people are doing it. And I keep hearing about it. We bring this up to our kids. I am – going to say for right now, I am for position two. I have kids. I don't want them to use it. I don't use it myself. I think it is a very poor decision. But I think taking away the stigma away from it, I can actually discuss it with my children. We discuss smoking, and as we know, that smoking rates are going down, even though it's legal. But it opens up the opportunity to say, well, this is the damage it can cause. This is what it is. And I think it's actually opening it up, the dialogue between for the kids. I don't think kids are, just because it's available to them, they're going to do it. I think that's not giving our kids and our younger generation any credit for, they're really smart if you give them the opportunity. And when, I was going to go down a couple other things. One of the things that I actually saw recently was an article from JAMA, which is the Journal of American Medical Association, and I believe they said that 25% or opioid deaths, painkiller deaths, have actually dropped 25% in the states that have legalized. And I think that goes back to self-medicating. If people have it available to them, they're going to, use something different if it's pain. And the gentleman that came up here, Mr. Reiner, I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing it right, he said that he used it for pain, and I find that very interesting. And I want to keep an open mind about both sides. The other thing that I wanted to, I have a ton of questions, actually, but I wanted to point out is that it's pointed out that brain structures change with the use of marijuana, and I don't know too much about it, but I'd like to find out, is it long-term, the first term? These are the things that I would ask my kids.
Let me stop you there, because I mean, not to stop your testimony, but to say if you'd like to have that question, there was one slide on the Conside's presentation on that, which referred to a study. And Dr. Herbert, were any of the studies that you presented to us that are on the website related to changes in brain structure from regular use of marijuana?
Yes, sir, Lieutenant Governor. The studies do document that there were both anatomic changes in the brain and long-term functional changes from regular use of marijuana. So they would be on the website where you posted them there.
Okay. So that can be found on the online public notice system, aws.state.ak.us. And so go on with your questions.
So that was one of the things. If it was a one-time mistake, a child tried it. You know, and a lot of kids do try stuff. I actually would prefer my kids to try marijuana over alcohol because of, you know, how many times do you hear about girls being used when they're drunk. I actually have never heard one. I'm not saying it hasn't happened, but I haven't heard one where, hey, I was high off of marijuana and I was raped. And so there's some of the stuff that I was looking at. But there's also the psychotropic drugs, which are prescription drugs, and it's one of the things that they tout and they use for kids that have, you know, some emotional – they actually cause brain structure changes as well. So prescription drugs can do this, and I think it's one of those things that as a parent or as an adult that you actually look – it's one of those choices you make. You actually dig in and you make a personal choice. I think in a free society, that's part of it, is that you allow people to make decisions, even if they're poor and even if you don't like it. But as soon as we cross that boundary and we start saying, hey, you can't make that, they can do the same for us. So I think that, you know, this one, I support people's right to make a poor decision as long as it doesn't affect me. I have a ton of questions. Can I start? Or
yes, please.
Would you prefer to just go down each one? Or
yeah, why don't you go?
Okay, so one of them was that they were talking about the cost on the pro and con side. So I heard the imprisonment side, it was like, I believe, only 8%. So what is it? How many cases do we have going through the court system right now? What's the percentage for marijuana-related activities?
I'm going to call on Major Casanovas first, but let's just ask the pro and con side, because each of you had statistics about the number of cases in the state that were slightly different. Mr. Rampert, first.
So the information that we have was related to arrests, not specifically incarcerations, and the American Civil Liberties Union using FBI uniform crime reporting data says that there are more than 2,000 arrests every year for marijuana possession, just possession, not selling it, not buying it, just possessing it. However, that's what I'm going to say on that issue. I would like to kind of just defer to the department head or the representative from the department on this, because I think this is really one of those issues where we can both sides can have their statistics. But I think this question would be best answered by the department representative.
And Christina, do you have any comment on that number at this point?
We're relying on what the studies that the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police have conducted to basically, you know, reiterate that there would basically be no cost savings because folks that are incarcerated for anything related to marijuana would otherwise already be there. And I've submitted those items as well for the record and for public review. So I will pass it back to you for agency input.
Okay. And Major Casanovas, do you have a number? And then I'll ask April Wilkerson in corrections.
Lieutenant Governor, Major Casanovas here. I do not know the percentage of charges filed in the Alaska court system and how many of those are drug-related, or in this case specifically marijuana-related. The Alaska State Troopers attempts to survey the police agencies, federal, state, local, each year to provide information that we then make available on our website called the Annual Drug Report. So for 2013, the last full calendar year, the arrests that we reflect that the state troopers, the charges are 669, so less than two a day that are marijuana related. And when I say charges, for example, a single subject that is on has a grow site might have three or four charges that are related to marijuana, same person, same grow. And so this doesn't equate to the exact number of citizens But that's 669 for the calendar year of 2013.
Thank you. Somebody just put us on hold on a state phone. Recognize the music. Okay. April, how many people are incarcerated for marijuana-related offenses today in the Alaska jail system and or correction system?
I believe we have currently approximately 11 offenders that are currently incarcerated. However, again, there's more than just the routine marijuana. The charges that they're being held on or convicted of are more serious than and additional to the marijuana.
So of the 11 offenders currently incarcerated, that's not just for simple possession, but it's also for selling or some sort of crime related or not related to the marijuana possession?
That is correct. That is correct.
Okay. To ask you and Major Casanovas, is it possible the number would be much – does the state often prosecute under federal law for violations of this law or not? I mean, and I know from other law enforcement I've been involved in, when you catch somebody doing something, and it could be anything from an environmental infraction to a white-collar crime, you often have a choice of prosecuting under state law or federal law, and then depending on where you're prosecuted and which court it is, it may be a different place to serve. So would you say that number is representative, or are there many, many referrals to – we don't have the DEA participating in these hearings, and, of course, federal law would stay as it is right now. So do you have any comment on that?
I don't have the information on that. I would have to get back to you on that.
Okay. All right. That question may come up. Your next question, ma'am.
So if this were to go through, would it result in any lawsuits from prior cases? And what about the cost associated with overturning these charges? I'm sorry if these were already asked and discussed and answered.
Let's ask the proponent and the opponent on this issue to begin with. In several of the previous laws aimed at initiatives aimed at changing our marijuana laws, there was usually an amnesty provision for previous offenders of one kind or another. And Chris, I noticed that you did not include that in this proposal. Can you explain why, and can you explain if there's any projected amnesty or if somebody is right now being incarcerated, fined, under probation, or under any form of law enforcement for previous actions contrary to the law, what does this change in the law mean?
I think that would be up to the courts to decide afterwards. We didn't include an amnesty provision because, honestly, it's just not practical. While we don't believe that people should be arrested for choosing to use marijuana, what they were doing under the law was illegal at the time. So it's fairly impractical to have an amnesty provision, which I think is one of the reasons why those past initiatives didn't succeed. So, but as far as future, appeal of charges for past offenses, that's probably up to the courts to decide.
Okay. Is that answer sufficient? Christina, do you want to say anything about that?
No, I don't really have anything to add for that. I think it's really up to the state.
Okay. And Bob, with the ABC board, what is generally your point of view, or what is the current regulation in terms of past offenses when somebody wants to be a seller of alcohol or a bartender or any of the ways that you regulate the disposition of alcohol?
Yeah, thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Right now with servers, their criminal history isn't a factor, but the board does look at licensees, and what they look at is what's in the public's interest, whether or not to deny or revoke, suspend or refuse to issue a license, and they look at acts that constitute a crime of moral turpitude, violations of Title IV, which is the alcohol laws of this state, or violations of alcohol laws in other states, and also, excuse me, whether or not they've had a felony conviction in this state or another state within 10 years preceding date of application.
Thank you. Your next question, Amanda. Thank you.
Just to make sure I understand that. So if they had a prior marijuana offense and that was the leading thing that they had a felony, I don't know if they could get a felony for that, but let's say if they did, is that going to ban them from being able to go and get a license to sell, or I guess commercially?
You heard the question. Let's ask that of the proponent and of the ABC board and the opponent, for that matter.
Well, can you restate the question? There's been some background noise on the microphones from shuffling papers. Sometimes it's hard to hear.
I apologize for that. I think we just had a door open and closed during that question. But the question is, if somebody has a prior felony for infractions of the marijuana laws, do you expect that person would be able to get a license to be a dispenser of marijuana now?
So I stated earlier that would be up to the regulatory board to decide if that was needed to restrict people from getting licenses if they'd had a prior felony. But that isn't specifically written into the initiative. I will say, though, in Colorado, they have come up with some regulations as far as if the business owner or the licensee can apply and receive a marijuana business license if they've had a prior marijuana felony conviction.
They in Colorado, you're saying they do allow it?
They restrict it.
They restrict it.
To some extent. I don't have the exact details in front of me, but to some extent.
Okay. And Christina, do you have any comment on that or Bob with the ABC board?
I don't have any comment, but thank you for asking.
And Lieutenant Governor Bob Easley here with ABC. These are just factors that the board will, in its discretion, consider in determining whether or not to issue the license if it's in the public interest. It doesn't mean that it's a fact that if you have a felony conviction within 10 years that you're absolutely not going to get a liquor license, but those are the things that the board will consider.
And just to make it clear, you've not written any regulations on marijuana dispensaries because the law hasn't passed yet. So you could adopt the same precedent that you have with alcohol, or you could be totally different.
That is correct, sir.
Okay. Next question.
Do you guys anticipate that enforcement of violations of the regulations will become harder in the future?
That's a broad question. The question is, do we anticipate that enforcement of the regulations will become harder in the future? I'm going to refer you first to the cost estimate because each of the departments, and let me just say, Major Casanovas, you may want to answer that question to begin with, and also ask the Department of Commerce and also ask the Department of Health and DEC. There's four different groups that at least would have some manner of new regulation that they don't have today. DEC would be regulating marijuana in foodstuffs. Commerce with the ABC board would be regulating new dispensaries. The troopers mentioned that they would be spending maybe more time focused on bootlegging, and bootlegging was not a word that they used, but I mean, I make it akin to bootlegging, where if people have their own stills, you know, and they're not regulated or in the regulatory system, the troopers would still be focused at putting them down, as well as keeping Alaska-grown marijuana from leaving the state one way or the other. And then the Department of Health, presumably, and I say this, actually presumably is the wrong word, but the Department of Health does have several different regulations. So are any of the people representing those four departments willing to comment on that any further in terms of the difficulty of regulation or the kind of regulation you're going to need to do? And I neglected revenue, which will have to set up new taxes. All right, so you've got at least five new sets of regulations or procedures that will need to be written with this bill coming through.
I was going to say, it seems like both sides estimate. You can't really estimate this from the cost savings. one way, or the cost that it's really going to cost in the long run. But I'm not seeing it. It's good that there's going to be indefinite, and so nobody has to be on that side. But I do have a question for the health and social services. How, and I guess the con side as well, because I heard it mentioned that there were going to be issues, and part of the cost related was with services that were going to increase. How and what do you believe those issues will be that will increase? Because as I see it, marijuana is already out there, and people are already using it, and adults are already using it. So what difference do you think is going to change?
Diane Casto, would you like to answer that question? Is Diane still on, still online from Department of Health and Social Services? I don't hear her. They have a list in the cost estimate here, which I could read out loud, or I can just refer people to. It's published, and I'd be happy to connect you up with Ms. Casto at a later time.
Sorry, no, I told you a lot of questions.
Okay, yeah, let's try to go through them real fast.
Okay. The other one was brought up, it says in Colorado, I guess, is that study that was done on the kids being more, or there was an increased usage? My idea was they're more open about their usage, maybe, and if that was related, I was hoping the study, is it going to be online as well?
That study is online right now. It's on the website, on the online public notice website.
Two more questions?
Go for it.
Okay. They mentioned other products for marijuana plants, one of them being hemp. What other products that are produced from marijuana plants? I guess maybe I'm looking at the cost, like the benefit of.
Mr. Rampert, I think we'd asked your colleague the other day if this law specifically enabled the use of marijuana plants, hemp, for anything from rope, clothing, paper, facial products, other than that, and the answer we were given was that yes, it would allow this. And you heard explained today that the government is given the authority, leeway to reduce the tax. I don't know that there's any specific. Chris, would you like to speak to that, or Christina, would you like to speak to that issue?
Yeah, sure. Part of the intent of the initiative was to allow, like as you said, the I guess it's the department to lower the tax rate on certain parts of the marijuana plant, specifically to allow hemp to be used and to be processed. So, if that answers the question.
Okay.
Sorry, it's kind of a repeat. One other thing that it was is that from the understanding from both sides, I heard the child-friendly, which are like the lollipops, night bars, that sort of stuff. But when I think I read it somewhere in there, and you mentioned that it was going to be banned, and that would be something that's in there. But then also the fact that it's already banned and kids are already getting it, I guess I wanted to kind of see the comments and maybe clarify it for me if you could, both sides.
Chris, I'm going to ask you to answer first whether or not the law requires this to be banned or allows it to be banned. Where in the proposed rule does that proposed law does it have it? And I think our question is, isn't this stuff already available in that form?
Right. So yeah, there's two parts to that question. Then it is already available and it is already here. We are seeing that. And in section 17.38.090, the rulemaking section, it allows for the health and safety regulations and standards for the manufacture of marijuana products and cultivation of marijuana, those regulations can be set by the department. So that along with the labeling requirements and the requirements to prevent the sale or diversion of marijuana and marijuana products to persons under the age of 21 gives the regulatory agency broad control over the types of edible products that are allowed. So they would be able to set regulations to prohibit those products from being manufactured or sold.
All right. And Christina, do you have any comment on that?
I do. A couple of things. When Chris said in his PowerPoint presentation that these will be banned, they've not been banned in Colorado, and they're specifically by name edibles and concentrates written into the ballot measure in Alaska, and it is written to be more comprehensive and protective than Colorado, and that is because our Constitution protects you know, a substantive change for being made in a ballot measure, lest it be considered a repeal. I would ask the question, you know, how can you ensure that edibles are banned when they're not banned in Colorado, which actually has a less restrictive, a more liberal, saying it backwards. Colorado's ballot measure was not as protective of edibles as Alaskans is, and edibles are not banned there, and packaging is not banned there, and they've seen an increase in children getting access to it. And while we know that facilities aren't going to sell to children, what's really the unintended consequence here is the pretty packaging and the treats that are clearly geared towards a younger audience. They're attractive, they're appealing. And when you say that the labeling requirements, really nowhere in the ballot measure does it say, you know, that edibles can be banned or that, you know, the labeling and the packaging is going to be a requirement. And it's certainly not the case in Colorado. So I would really push back and say that this was written incredibly broad and incredibly protective of the industry.
So I'd actually like to respond to that, if that's okay, Lieutenant Governor.
Yes, and I'm going to ask you, I mean, you referred to the health and safety measure, but go ahead and respond, because I think it's important to get the plain language of the law down there that allows you to ban this.
So, okay, so yeah, it the health and safety regulations and standards, it gives the regulatory board broad authority. It gives them broad authority along with the labeling requirements and the requirements to prevent the sale or diversion of marijuana to persons under the age of 21. It gives the board broad authority to regulate those things. So while it doesn't specifically say that they can ban those things, it gives them the authority to do so. My concern here is we keep hearing Christina say that you would be open to lawsuits if we changed the initiative in any substantial way. The problem here is this isn't changing the initiative. This is written into the initiative to allow the regulatory agency to have control over these requirements, health and safety regulations, labeling requirements. It's broad authority. So if they want to completely ban child-friendly edibles, they can and they will. I have never said anything about banning edibles in general. I've said child-friendly edibles, lollipop suckers, all of those things that Christina talks about. Edibles are allowed under this initiative. That's a fact that's stated clearly in the initiative. But child-friendly edibles can and will be banned under the rulemaking process.
So I mean, toward that end, is a brownie child-friendly?
That would be up to the regulatory board to decide. It gives them broad authority to control those things.
Okay. I hesitate to ask if my mother's bourbon balls are illegal at this point, but go ahead.
No, I was going to thank everybody for their patience. I know I have a lot of questions. Is there contact information on the website as well that I can reach some to ask you guys questions later?
Yeah. Anyone who has contact questions, you can send them to me at lt.governor@alaska.gov, and we'll refer them to the appropriate agency.
Thank you very much.
Governor, this is Diane Casto. I apologize. I was getting ready to respond to you when you asked me a question a while ago, and because I'm on a hotel phone, I hit the hang-up button instead of the unmute button. So I apologize.
I hate that when that happens. Okay. Diane, I guess the question had been asked about the kind of health regulation. There had been some questions about your cost estimate, and all I had absent you being there was to give Amanda Mitchell, it's Mitchell, right?
Yeah.
Your cost estimate, but Diane's back online if you've got a question for her.
Yeah, it was actually, being that marijuana is already out there and kids have access to it along with many other drugs and different substances, it was brought up that the cost for health and social services was going to increase. I was just curious on what those issues and how it would increase, if you wouldn't mind.
Oh, I would happy to do that. I have a copy with me of what we originally put forward. And as has been talked about throughout this hearing, everything we put together is an estimate because we don't know. We do not know how this will impact our state, but so with most of our estimates, we did a range from zero to, you know, what we thought might be the highest percentage. So the kind of things that we looked at would be the possibility of increased treatment for people who are using increased amounts of marijuana with more access, with easier access, more availability. The thought is that there will be an increase in use. Also looking at some of the increase in mental health treatment services, there are some studies that show that the regular use of marijuana can, in some people, not everyone, have project earlier onset of some mental health conditions. We looked at the possibility of some increase of some public health funding through our public health centers that people are coming. I know that in reading some of the information from both Washington and Colorado, and probably more so Colorado just because they've been selling it longer, increases in calls to the poison control and young children getting access to some products we were just talking about. So looking at that, looking at the potential of some increases in child protective services. Again, if marijuana is at home, children get access to it, there could be some endangerment issues. You know, they're all estimates and guesstimates. Looking at some of potential increases in our juvenile justice services, and just trying to read through here real quickly. And then the other thing is potential, again, changes in some of the ways we work with our HR and our hiring policies, our drug-free policies. What's that mean? What does that look like? So those were the kind of things we looked at. And again, it was all based on potential changes, knowing that we do not know what the outcome will be. And so we just kind of gave a range from zero to a higher amount. But those were the types of issues we felt we may be needing to address.
Okay, so it is based off assumptions, and I can't expect you can pull out your crystal ball and see the future, but have you also considered the positive aspects of what marijuana could do, because they use it for other issues? I believe marijuana is also used to treat heroin addiction. I was curious to find out if you guys actually considered some of the other sites.
At this point we did not. We were asked, you know, just to look at the costs that we thought. And, you know, I don't have any knowledge of marijuana currently being used for heroin addiction in our regular treatment programs because of its legal status or illegal status.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you for the honesty in that answer.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else here who would like to testify? Was that Mr. Hawkins who just had to leave?
Ms. Hawkins.
Oh, I'm sorry. Merle, thank you.
Merle Hawkins, lifetime resident of Ketchikan. I would vote no on this initiative at this point in my life. And so I did outline the pro and the con. I think marijuana leads to a lack of motivation. It's a gateway drug. I think it's attractive to vulnerable people, such as mentally ill, the homeless, traumatized vets, people with post-traumatic stress disorder. I think it's attractive to Alaska Natives, and that's because the Alaska Natives, historic trauma that happened to Alaska Natives, and it's used by these individuals to escape from the pain instead of seeking the help that they need, and it leads to behavior changes, makes people more liberal and do things that they would not normally do. And the potency is a huge issue, I think. So I didn't have much on the pro side. To me, it's better than alcohol, but I don't think that's the reason to make it available for everybody in Alaska that's over 21. I think I would be supportive if it was just for medical use. So certainly looked at that. So those were my major highlights. And the other part about Alaska Natives being so vulnerable to it is because still to this day, Alaska Natives have the highest rate in the nation of alcoholism, drug abuse, suicide, child abuse, heart disease, diabetes, cancer. Those last three are preventable. And for these reasons, I would not support this initiative.
Thank you for your statement. Do you have any questions?
No.
Thank you. Mr. Brad Erickson.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. I had indicated on the sign-up sheet that I wasn't going to testify, but actually there are some things I'll try to be brief. I'm not testifying either in favor or against the initiative. In a conversation with the city attorney, Mr. Singer, there were a number of questions about how this would be administered and how we would advise our client agencies in proceeding if the initiative were to pass. Rather than posing these questions for the folks to respond to, I think probably the most expedient way is for me to go through the issues identified, tell you based upon language of the initiative that Brad would be implemented if apparent, and then first, in 1738-030-83, a grow or whatever operation, a marijuana facility can be operated by someone in lawful possession of the real property. As I understand it, a venture would be in lawful possession, so it wouldn't necessarily mean that the property owner knows or depends on that a person who is renting has the right to be where they are, could operate a grow facility or store or what have you. The 1738-060 marijuana accessories to be sold or bought without criminal penalties, and municipalities would be precluded from criminalizing that. The definitions, marijuana facilities, marijuana establishments, don't include marijuana accessories within their definition. And so the regulatory structure where the ABC board or a substitute board or, in the case of the ABC board, do not act, a municipal board adopts regulations, they would not be able to regulate the various accessories or establishments selling those, as I understand it under the language of the initiative. The proponents clarified that it is an outright rate prohibition on anti-head shop ordinances, and so this is like the one that the assembly has to go away. The 1738-100E local limit can set numerical limits or prohibit them outright under 1738-110 in a way of overlapping municipal jurisdictions. Borough would set the situation where if the city is going to authorize three and the borough is only authorized one, that conflict isn't addressed. Presumably, the borough would have the ability to effectively override a city, whether it's a home rule city or not, overrule a city in the borough. If the borough went with a local option absolutely prohibiting them, then that would, in effect, prohibit any city from authorizing them as a city within the borough. There's nothing that addresses, in terms of the comparable alcohol laws that would allow a community-operated store, and it's not clear whether community-operated stores are contemplated or a situation where perhaps the city wanted to say, well, we will allow one store and it's going to be community-operated. If it's not prohibited, our presumption would be that we would be allowed to do so. If we can limit the number of entities that can operate, can we sell the franchise? Can we have an auction? If we allow only three in the community, can we auction the rights each year to the highest bidder? Presumably, if it's not prohibited and wouldn't be prohibited by the regulations, we could do so. The prohibition, the outright prohibition by a vote or initiative in the local option under 110, traditionally with the alcoholic beverage establishments, the methods the municipality can object, there are objections that can be overridden if the objection is based upon perhaps the line of products that someone has or the history of the establishment, or if they owe taxes or have other debts to the municipality, and they can require adequate insurance of payment. However, zoning is an area where it's an objection that the ABC board cannot waive. My understanding would be that if, for example, the city of Ketchikan wanted to authorize up to three establishments within the city, but the borough adopted a zoning ordinance which prohibited that use throughout the borough, then even though we had not prohibited marijuana establishments within the borough, by not allowing them in the zoning, they would be effectively prohibited, and this law would not override that. If it's intended otherwise, I appreciate having that clarified. 1738.110D, the local regulation or ordinances, if you go to the default of municipality establishing regulations, the initiative calls for those regulations to be adopted following the State Administrative Procedures Act in 44.62. That involves notices through the state procedures, and the procedures for the State Administrative Procedures Act are significantly different than the procedures we use for adopting ordinances. And my presumption is if the municipality is going to be regulating in the position of the ABC board, the ABC board does not adopt regulations, then we would do so by ordinance, and that would be considered substantial compliance with the Administrative Procedures Act. In the taxing, the excise tax, 4361010, the initiative does not indicate any sharing of revenues with municipalities. The response from the proponents was that local sales tax or excise taxes are not preempted, so presumably the state keeps all of the revenue from that tax, but municipalities could levy their own taxes and municipal sales taxes would be applied. One ambiguity on the $50 per ounce upper limit of taxes, it's not indicated how you would measure the weight, if it's a dry weight, or more particularly, if you have extracts such as, I don't know how you make earwax, as it was referred to, but if it takes 500 pounds to make 1 ounce of earwax, is the tax on the 500 pounds, or is it on the modified product? Similarly, if the substance is introduced to a brownie, do you weigh the brownie, or on what basis is that tax extracted? Finally, I had a comment about in the liquor context, there's consideration of the past criminal record of the licensees. I think that's been addressed.
Thank you. I'm going to ask the proponents, do you have any comment on kind of the conclusions that Mr. Brent Erickson, the borough attorney, has come to here on your proposed law? Chris, are you still there?
I was muted. Sorry. To be honest, it was really hard to hear what he was saying. There was some shuffling of papers next to a microphone. I think this is kind of continually happening. It's really hard to hear the people speaking on the floor. But a couple of things that I made out from what he said, I think he asked about edible products as far as the tax, $50 tax is concerned. And marijuana specifically does not include, the definition of marijuana in the initiative specifically doesn't include any of the ingredients combined with marijuana to prepare food products. So that would be that weight would not be included in the $50. And specifically, the tax is applied from the cultivation facility to the retail store or manufacturing facility. So the tax is applied once, $50 per ounce, after it's grown. So it's not applied at any other step along the way.
So in other words, if somebody's selling that earwax, as an example, the tax is applied when the green leafy substance goes to the earwax factory. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. So as soon as it's grown in the cultivation facility, it's paid by the cultivator when they sell it to the retail store or to that manufacturing facility where they produce the oils.
Okay. Just going back on his questions, the first question he asked, Chris, is can a renter do what he wants? In other words, if somebody's got a lease that includes utilities and the guy now wants to set up a growing operation, can the landlord say, I don't want a growing operation in my property?
I'm checking the regulations just to make sure I'm answering correctly. So it says marijuana cultivation may only occur on property lawfully in the possession of the cultivator or with consent of the person in lawful possession of the property. So I guess that would be up to the owner.
Okay, so
my point was that a renter is in lawful possession. Therefore, it doesn't matter what the owner wants unless they put that in their lease. If I'm a renter with lawful possession, I can do what I want with the property, correct?
Oh, yeah, that's correct then, yeah.
Interesting. Now, just caveat on tour there, the federal government can still come along and confiscate your property if you're doing a grow operation. Is that not correct under federal law?
Yes, but we haven't seen that in Colorado or Washington as far as people growing a limited number of plants. Actually, in Washington, you're not allowed to grow. You're not allowed to home grow like you are in Colorado and like you will be able to under this initiative. But currently, under Raven v. Alaska, you are allowed to actually grow in your own home. So this would just further clarify that ability.
Major Casanovas, I remember as somebody who occasionally rents a property, receiving a call from a trooper about something a renter of mine was doing, and the trooper telling me he could have confiscated my property, even though I had no idea the tenant was selling drugs from the property. This is a couple of decades ago now. On the confiscation laws, they don't care who owns it. If the activity's happening there, you can confiscate. Is that correct?
Lieutenant Governor, if the federal government, i.e. the Internal Revenue Service or the Drug Enforcement Administration or the Federal Bureau of Investigation, if one of those entities decide to seize the property, the real property, and then move forward with either criminally charging the property or civilly filing on the property, they can ultimately obtain control and ownership of that property. But it's really, really difficult for me as a state representative to explain in much more detail than that, given it's the federal government who's taking the action.
Okay. Thank you. Chris, is there anything else? I'm just going down Mr. Brand Erickson's list. One was had to do with renters. One had to do with paraphernalia, which had basically already been answered. One had to do with establishments that there is no prohibition on establishments with accessories. I'm going to ask kind of an ancillary question there. Is a school prohibited now from, say, allowing pipes to be sold in the school store under this law? I mean, if there's a school store or a place next to a school where kids buy candy, now they have to be allowed to be sold pipes if this law passes. Is that correct?
I don't believe that to be correct. but I guess I would need to look more into the question. That's awfully specific.
Okay. All right. But you see no prohibition on, you would overrule the head shop laws, as you've already testified today and was mentioned. Do you have any comment on the numerical limits that a city and a borough could do and how this sorts out between boroughs and first-class cities within boroughs?
No, I don't. I don't have any comment.
Okay. Do you have any comment on the question of whether a city could sell a franchise by auction?
Whether the city could sell a franchise or a business license by auction?
No, the right to have a pot marijuana dispensary.
I don't. That's not specifically addressed in the initiative. I think that would probably be up to the city or municipality, borough.
Okay. Do you have any other questions?
I just appreciate the opportunity to put some of these questions in my the interpretation that I envision on the record.
Thank you very much. Christina, do you have any comment on these questions?
I don't. I apologize for talking over Chris a few moments ago. I had lost the call line, and so I was trying to let you know that I was back on. But I think that, you know, it's really – there are a lot of questions and a lot of unknowns, and I think that's really what it comes down to. And I appreciate the thoughtful questions that the gentleman provided. Thank you.
Thank you, and I'd like to apologize. We set a general 3-minute limit for testimony, but when Ms. Mitchell had a list of questions, we wanted to make sure that each citizen who had questions to ask of the experts had the right to do so, and there is one person who left who had been hoping to testify who wasn't able to. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on this measure before we close this hearing? Sir, please come forward. And while he does, I'm just going to ask, is there anybody waiting online to testify in today's hearing?
Yes, Renee Schofield.
Okay, Renee, we'll call you after this gentleman speaks. And, sir, what's your name? And thank you for being here today.
Yes, my name is Michael Blair. And my question is, how many deaths have been attributed to marijuana in particular, as opposed to alcohol?
Are you asking in human history, or are you asking in the state of Alaska annually?
I'm asking in the state of Alaska annually. I mean, there's a lot of, from what I know, there's a lot of alcohol-related deaths that happen every year, and not very many that I've ever heard of marijuana-related deaths ever in the history of at least my time on this planet, anyway.
I'm going to turn to Dr. Herbert if you're still online. Ward, are you still there?
Yes, sir, I am, Lieutenant Governor. I do not have that. We have not, I'm not aware that we've tabulated the marijuana deaths. A related response would be that there are more reported cases of drivers who are involved in accidents with marijuana in their blood than with legal intoxication limits for alcohol, and there would be some deaths there, but I do not have a specific answer on the number of marijuana deaths.
Okay. And just while we have you on the line, you up here. Alcohol is a depressant. Is marijuana a depressant? What do you classify marijuana as?
The literature that I've read would classify marijuana as a stimulant rather than a depressant. You're correct on that.
Okay. So there's a lot of people I know it puts to sleep, so there you go. Okay, thank you very much. Renee Schofield, please state your name and affiliation if you have one, and you're welcome to testify. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you. First, I'll apologize for my voice. I'm homesick today, so I'll get through this as quickly as I can. My name is Renee Schofield. I am the chair of the Substance Abuse Task Force in Ketchikan. We are a committee under the Ketchikan Wellness Coalition. As a group, the Ketchikan Wellness Coalition opposes Ballot Measure 2. As an individual, I also oppose Ballot Measure 2. I've spent a lot of time reviewing the document, and I can find nothing in it that looks to be good for my family, my community, or my state. As you've heard earlier today, only 11 people are incarcerated on marijuana charges. 11. And those have extenuating circumstances. Marijuana is rarely a primary charge, and so that already says that we're pretty liberal with what we're doing with it in our state. The Wellness Coalition recently did a survey of Ketchikan area residents. Those residents put substance abuse as the number one problem in our community. The families repeatedly said that substance abuse contributes to domestic violence, sexual assault, addiction issues, and many other problems within the community. It is my opinion, then, why would we want to add to what we already know is a problem? I don't think, and neither does the Substance Abuse Task Force, that Alaska is really ready for this. We should take a step back, watch what happens in Washington and Colorado, and if we really want to get into this and move this forward, then we should take our time and do it right. We need to know exactly what the impact is, and we need to know what the costs associated are going to be. Zipman Research recently put out a number that if Alaskans purchase marijuana at the same rate as Colorado, our tax revenue would be approximately $5 million. We've already heard here today that our costs far exceed that. As our budgets tighten down and we worry about how we're going to pay for infrastructure, social services, education, and other things, can we afford to add another expense to what we're already doing? At the end of the day, in all of this, all of us want a better Alaska. We want to improve the lives and the well-being of Alaskans. This ballot measure does nothing to improve the overall health of Alaskans. This doesn't even begin to touch the workplace issues of people who will say it's legal to smoke pot in my home, but I drive a truck. Federal law is going to trump this, and now we're going to have other issues in sorting out who has a job and who doesn't because they forgot that their job was in the balance. So we need to be very careful about that and very diligent. I also would hope that we'll be very cautious about where the money from the tax revenue goes. Is it going into education and social services? Is it infrastructure? Where is that going? Because the social service impact is tremendous. In Colorado, their social service bill increased 300%. Can we afford that in Alaska today? I don't think so. Thank you.
Renee, thank you. Do you have any questions of the experts online?
I do not. Thanks.
Is there anyone else online who's interested in testimony or presenting questions? Hearing none, let me thank everybody who's stayed with us for the last 2.5 hours, 2.25 hours, and thank the agency folks, thanks the proponents and the opponents. I want to let folks know that it's easier to find the website if you go to online.alaska.gov. Where we've got some of these studies and references by both sides. And I want to say to both proponents and opponents, if there's anything else that you feel that should go up there. And Ward, if you can take a look at what's on that website, and if it's been provided by the state, we're going to set that up in a neutral column rather than saying it's pro or con, even though the arguments may be used for or against. Thank you all for your help today, and we will be convening our next hearing on this issue, plus my cheat sheet, next week in Anchorage, Tuesday from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Denina Center. downtown. I look forward to seeing you there. And anyone who wants to join the hearing online can do so by calling 855-463-5009. Thank you all, and have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor.